Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. Hello. Welcome. Thanks for joining me. Hope you're having a good morning. I'm Jesse. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. This show and all of CJSF's programming is produced on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hunkaminam and Squamish speaking peoples, who have been here since time immemorial and have occupied this land and used this land and been here in many different ways for a very long time. And I am grateful to be here. Today on the show, we have a whole lot of election coverage content. It's coming up, about 2 weeks out, April 28th, not next Monday, but the one after. You can, of course, vote already. Go to elections.ca to find out more information about where and how you can do advance voting, mail voting, all these things. Make sure you vote. It is the one time every few years where we actually get a direct say in, a sort of direct say, in who represents us. So we will have a recording from a town hall that Public Affairs Department Work Study Iago put together, and we'll have another installation in our series of interviews with mayors of the Lower Mainland, with Danny speaking to Coquitlam Mayor Richard Stewart. But first, as usual, some music. And the only question is, which track from Devour's new album, Sports Car Era, will Jesse play today? And the answer is Quite Possessed, which is how I feel by this record. So enjoy. Three.
In advance of Canada's April 28th federal election, CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby is presenting a series of interviews with the mayors of British Columbia's Lower Mainland. This series will give each a chance to share what they see as the most important issues for voters in their city, what they would like to see from members of Parliament elected within their municipality, and why this election is particularly important for their constituents. I'm Danny Nesvedarani. And in this interview, I speak with the mayor of Coquitlam, Richard Stewart. During the interview, he speaks on the unique importance of this election due to Canada's current relations with the United States. He also highlights housing affordability as a key concern for this election, and explains how he hopes the next elected federal government will address this issue. Please take a listen.
This is an important election. I think all elections are important, but this one, there's no question, carries a bunch of extra weight and implications. And I think, as with most of our debates these days and our public discussions, they're about housing. And housing is the biggest of the challenges that local governments face, that the province faces. It's among the biggest challenges, period. Largely it's made so important and so urgent because of the enormous pace of immigration into our country. We have certainly have to, I'm pro-immigration, but there's a lot of work to be done when our population is increasing at the rate that it's increasing and without the supports necessary to make it go smoothly.
I think in a lot of conversations surrounding housing, there's almost this sense that different levels of government, whether it be municipal, provincial, or federal, sort of point the finger at each other in terms of who needs to be doing the most and who needs to be utilizing their jurisdiction to make those changes that you're talking about happen. Where do you think the federal government's role specifically is in working with local institutions to meet those housing goals?
Well, I'm looking back 50 years, 40 years, to the end of some of the tax credit programs that the federal government used to have in order to stimulate the development of rental housing. One of the most well-known ones was called MURB, Multi-Unit Residential Buildings, and it allowed investment in residential rental construction to use accelerated cost appreciation as a tax credit. So I'm not going to get into the details of it, but any such tax credit programs would, if they're successful, would stimulate the development of housing. That one was enormously successful. It stimulated the development of housing so much that when it ended, it made it so that you simply couldn't build rental housing from about 1975 onward. And I was one of those screaming in the mid-90s that if we didn't start generating more purpose-built rental housing, we would come to a point where all of our rental housing is at the end of its life. Typical rental buildings last about 50 years. And that's where we're at now. We're all of our existing rental is either 50 years old or brand new. And the cost disparity between the two is enormous. You can rent in an older building for $2 a square foot, you know, so 800 square feet, $1,600 a month. But if you're getting a brand new building, the rents are going to be much, much higher because people are willing to pay more. But there isn't enough of that kind of housing. So the federal government now faces this situation with high immigration. Immigration often displaces existing residents because immigrants either come with the financial wherewithal to outbid our children, outbid the current generation that needs housing, or else they come without those, and they need the aging and aged rental housing stock that's $2 a foot. So the federal government, because they're also responsible for immigration, this is their issue. They're responsible for the pace of immigration. They have traditionally been the federal housing agency was CMHC, Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, and it did a lot of housing policy in decades past. It hasn't for a couple of decades, and now it's starting to get into it a little bit more. So we hear from the leaders of federal parties about stimulating housing development. In fact, I think one of the parties is talking about doubling housing development, and we'll get to that in a minute because it's not possible, at least not in the short or midterm, to double the production of housing that we currently have.
You mentioned one of the parties wanting to double the rate of housing and how that is not possible. Can you speak more to that? Which party are you referring to?
Well, I don't want to mention parties because I think all of them want to increase housing production. And this is the Liberal platform actually was to double housing production. It's a laudable goal because if we were able to double housing production in a few years, we could build enough to perhaps catch up. However, our biggest challenge, their biggest constraint is skilled labor. We don't have enough skilled labor. The immigrants that are arriving in Canada aren't necessarily skilled at Canadian construction methods. If they have any construction skills at all, they're, all levels of government need to work to building up the level of skilled construction workers so that we could do this. There's a lot of developers in Lower Mainland that are relying on temporary foreign workers, skilled that they are. For example, a lot of skilled workers from Mexico coming up to build here in British Columbia. But it's a drop in the bucket compared to what we actually need to accomplish. We need to have hundreds of thousands of skilled workers added to the permanent workforce in British Columbia to build our way out of the demand and supply challenges that we're currently facing. And so the federal government, I don't know what kind of programs they would put in place in order to double production of housing.
You know, another thing I wanted to ask you has to do with, you know, you've been mayor since 2008, I believe.
Yes.
And how is this federal election different than previous ones that you've been mayor for? You know, I think one thing that is on a lot of people's minds right now has to do with what is going on south of the border and Canada's current relations with the United States. And how do you see that playing a role in this federal election?
I see it playing an enormous role. I don't know what the role will be, but there's no question that all of us are watching with trepidation for some, with humor for others, but watching what's going on in the United States, because there's no question that in the U.S. we have a leader who has all the answers to what needs to be done. Most of them are wrong, of course, but we hesitate as governments to contemplate that situation ever happening in Canada, where people stop consulting with the experts and start advancing their personal objectives or measures that will benefit one part of the population, but not benefit the population in general. We've been lucky in Canada that we typically haven't had that with any of the parties. We typically have parties that, granted, they're left or they're right. But the idea that the current idea that tariffs will solve problems, for example, is going to be incredibly inflationary.
In the last municipal election in Coquitlam, one of the reasons you cited running again had to do with wanting to keep doing work regarding mental health. Yes. And I'm wondering if you feel like that has taken enough of a focus with this federal election, or if the parties are giving enough focus policy-wise on improvements towards infrastructure regarding mental health in Canada.
I suspect that I won't see in my lifetime the parties at any level of government giving enough attention to the issue of mental health. It's not the, you know, governments invest in cancer treatment and they invest in all kinds of things. Mental health, partly because of the stigma associated with it, partly because those who struggle with it aren't as vocal as they might be if they had heart disease or any number of other illnesses. And so our family got to experience some of those realities firsthand a decade ago. Our daughter was diagnosed and ultimately institutionalized repeatedly for her mental illness. It was an enormous challenge for us, and we were a family with resources, a family with connections, and we couldn't get treatment for her because it's simply not available in Canada. In the public system, we had to effectively mortgage your house. You do what you can, and even then the treatments are really scarce and hard to secure. And we know lots of families because she was public with her mental health challenges. We got to hear from families that had the same issues and perhaps faced economic barriers that made it impossible to connect, or geographic barriers because those treatments aren't available in other parts of the province necessarily. So, and untreated mental illness doesn't go away. It manifests itself in lots of different ways. And, you know, part of our homelessness population today, part of our addictions population today resulted from untreated mental illness. And so when we talk about homelessness, when we talk about housing challenges, mental health is a big part of that too. And rental housing and the isolation associated with seniors housing and all kinds of other things have a mental health component. So I can say with how proud I am that our daughter responded well to treatment, and she's now a psychiatric nurse in British Columbia, helping others like her. But that's not going to happen unless governments invest in mental health treatment, invest in first response for mental health crisis. It shouldn't be the police that are the ambulance for persons with mental illness. That's the system today. If you call for a mental health crisis, the police will come. And if the patient is one who responds poorly to uniforms and guns, this isn't going to go well. We've had it on our front porch as a family where the police show up. You know, these are illnesses that are covered in the Canada Health Act and covered by, at least theoretically, by our socialized medical system here in Canada, and yet you can't get treatment. So I look to the federal government to start advancing that as a major issue. We haven't heard much from them. We haven't heard much from the province, which actually has to build the facilities and hire the medical teams to provide these treatments and these supports for persons with mental illness. And ultimately, we're not going to solve homelessness without tackling the mental health and addiction side of it.
I think one last thing I want to touch on, you've mentioned housing a lot in this interview, and admittedly, many of the other mayors we've talked to have also mentioned housing as a key issue this federal election. One thing you've touched on a few times, I've noticed, in particular, is immigration. And I'm wanting to know what your take is on what the federal government should do regarding immigration in Canada.
Canada has always received immigrants, and I absolutely support that. Our challenge related reason for bringing it up in the context of housing or a number of other issues is that the costs associated with population growth are typically borne by cities, and we don't get income tax. You know, our only source of tax really is to tax housing and to have property taxes on our residents. And a lot of the existing residents express concern over the fact that their taxes are going up in order to allow new residents to come, because we're stuck with the burden of also funding population growth. The federal government's responsible for immigration. They should also fund at least partly the costs associated with responding to the increased populations. One of the tools that local governments have is development cost charges. And the mantra typically is development must pay for development. Growth should pay for growth. But what they really mean is new houses should pay for the cost of population increases. Ultimately, it's a policy that Canadian governments have relied on for decades, and it's stupid. How on earth, you know, we obviously, if the population rises, we need new schools, we need new homes. These are things that we need to respond to the population growth. We don't tax new schools to fund population growth. Why would we tax new homes to pay for population growth? And yet that's how it gets, you know, we need a larger sewage treatment plant. So there's a development cost charge put in place so that the new homes or the buyers of new homes are going to have to pay for that. Well, the buyers of new homes aren't me. We have a home. The buyers of new homes are our children. And they're out there trying to form families, but the housing prices are so sky high. And we're not doing anything effective at trying to make the housing market more affordable. Can we fix it? Yes. But it's going to require every level of government to talk together. When I read a platform from a federal party that was written in a hotel room someplace in Ottawa, without any consultation whatsoever with the people who have to implement it, this isn't going to work. Ultimately, if it's a local government policy, you have to talk to local governments. And the province has now proved, British Columbia has now proven, that they have no interest in talking to the people that have to implement municipal policy. And the federal government, the platforms don't seem to reflect a good dialogue with the people that have to implement it and the people that are affected by it. It's just a bunch of bright ideas from, it's not that different from when Donald Trump wakes up in the morning and thinks he's got a great idea for some new policy, and by noon he's implemented it. At least here in Canada, by noon it's on a party platform. It hasn't been implemented yet, but we really need to increase the level of dialogue and make it so that we're not different factions all fighting amongst each other, but rather working together for a common cause. And in this case, it's a common cause of making life in Canada more affordable.
Once again, that was my interview with Coquitlam Mayor Richard Stewart, outlining what he sees as the top priority issues for Coquitlam residents in the upcoming April 28th federal election. Stay tuned to CJSF 90.1 FM for more interviews in this series featuring mayors from other municipalities across the Lower Mainland.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, a CJSFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Hello everyone, thank you for joining me for another episode here at CJSF. My name is Iago, and I would just like to take a brief moment to remember that we're broadcasting from Burnaby on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Coast Salish people. So, today, we're going to be zooming on an event that I had the opportunity to participate that brought together community voices and political leadership around one of the most urgent issues of our time, climate action. So on April 5th, residents of the Three Cities gathered on St. Clair's of Assish Parish Hall in Coquitlam for a special all-candidates town hall on the environment and climate. The town hall was hosted by a coalition of many grassroots groups, Force of the Nature Alliance, Neighborhoods United, Let Out the Sea Movement, Rondo's Tree Fellowship, Burke Mountain Naturalists, and West Coast Environmental Law. It was a really interesting event. All candidates had the opportunity to share a little bit of their campaigns, platform, parties' platforms, and also to answer a few questions about their intentions to advocate for the environment. Just on that note, we had all candidates invited, but only Green Party, Liberal Party, and the NDP people showed up. And from those, I would just like to briefly recognize every of the names that were there. So we had Nash Milani from the Green Party for Port Moody Coquitlam. We had Zoe Royer from the Liberal Party, also for Port Moody Coquitlam. And Bonita Zahirlo from the NDP, also from Port Moody Coquitlam. And also we had from the district of Coquitlam, Port Coquitlam, Michelle Peter Glenster from the Green Party, Ron McNaughton from the Liberal Party, Laura DuPont from the NDP. Appreciate their permission to share their answers with you.
I mean, any time a group of people come together, I think we're in the presence of the extraordinary. Many of you have committed some time today, especially given the beautiful weather that's happening outside, and yet decided you're going to opt to be indoors. To be indoors so that we can hear from each other as a community, to challenge some of the objectives as to why people are running for office, but I hope we don't lose sight of the fact that many people have put their names forward in order for them to serve their community the best way they know how. Once again, I'm Adele Gamara, and it is really a privilege to be with you here today in this church. I was told by some of the organizers that indeed this is not the church, but this is the community hall. But right next door is St. Clair of Assisi Church, a Catholic church. Unlike churches, mosques, synagogues, they're physical structures that bring people together. And just like our federal election, the intention is to bring people together. And I don't want to lose sight of why we are gathered here today. Indeed, we have in front of us people who put their names forward to run for public office, to represent each and every one of us in the best way they know how. But as we see, there are people who are actually going out of their way to divide us, trying to find what ways to hedge our differences to ensure that we're unable to have better conversations with each other. I don't have to mention what's going on south of the border and the impact that is happening, not only on our economy in terms of terrorists, but also what is going to happen with our environment, which is at the core of the conversation tonight.
Hi, yes, my name is Nash Milani. I'm 26. I'm running for the Green Party in Port Moody, Coquitlam. Though I am still seeking some signatures, so if you'd like to see me after this, I'd love to get your name on that piece of paper, do your democratic duty, and let's get a full candidate representation on the ballot. We haven't had a Green Party representative for Port Moody since 2019, so... And I will be completely upfront and say that in the past I've been a lifelong NDP voter and supporter, and it was this year, as it became clear that an early election was going to be called, I was checking party websites almost daily. I was checking the NDP website, hoping that they were going to put up an updated platform, and they did not. They still have not. Their platform talks about 2021 and the Erin O'Toole as head of the Conservatives. I don't know who's still talking about Erin O'Toole, but the Green Party had their platform together. They are putting forward bold initiatives to bring this country into the current era. We have to stand on our own aside from our entanglement with the United States. It is becoming